Welcome back to the CTV show, and it's feeling like the trade deadline today because Davante Adams is on the move, Amari Cooper is on the move, and it's just been a jam-packed day in the NFL world. I'm Thomas Parker, as always joined by Christian Catanacci. Cat, what's going on, man?
You know what, Pac? I've had better days, but at the same time, I'm doing fantastic. We're alive and well, and this season needs to slow the heck down because it's flying through, and it's kind of pissing me off because we're almost at the end of October here, and yeah. Soon, you mentioned, the trade deadline is going to be around the corner, and then that's when things get a little crazy because we're talking November, December, the dog days, right? The Cowboys won't be playing in the dog days of this year, but maybe Jerry Jones will with the weekly radio hosts that he's going to maybe take it to the ring after Jake Paul and Mike Tyson fight in AT&T Stadium later this month.
Yeah, Jerry not too pleased with the Cowboys' performance this past Sunday. Feels like the Jets, once again, not too pleased with their performance because they went out and they addressed it right away. The first bombshell of the day came around, 10 a.m. this morning?
I think it was even...
Could have been earlier.
Sooner than that.
Tough one. At home last night for the Jets, Monday Night Football, losing to the Bills. A little bit unfortunate with some field goals, but ultimately they looked better.
Yeah,
but still maybe not the standard that you'd expect from a quote-unquote Super Bowl caliber team, a team that they believe they should be. Aaron Rodgers' Hail Mary really helped them get back in the game.
But she does seem to do more than anybody.
Crazy. It's crazy. Ultimately, though, in the second half, the offense just continued to stall. They could not punch it in. And they lose again. They're now 2-4, two games back in the division to the Buffalo Bills. And they go out and they get Davante Adams, Aaron Rodgers' best friend. Who said that this guy doesn't make any decisions? Nobody. Only he. Only he said
he's
that.
The only person.
Because he's the only one who believes that. Yeah. He makes all the decisions around here. And Woody Johnson has kind of been his partner in crime in that aspect. Is Davante Adams going to make the New York Jets a Super Bowl caliber team?
Let's face the facts. Him and Rodgers, there may not be a better connection. I know they haven't played in a while, but I fully expect these two to just pick up right where they left off. But I don't really like... Does Adams make this team immediately contenders again, which... I already sold pretty much all my Jets stock. I'm one to sell my stock early. I tend to do this every single year, but to me, there's something missing with this Jets team. And honestly, I mean, I'll save it later, but because I want to hear what you got to say about Davante Adams. Obviously, it's a plus. Like, is it going to make their offense better? 100%. But is it enough? I honestly still find myself quite... I've been asking myself that pretty much all day, even with everything else that came out for the rest of the day. I still don't know if I have the right answer at the moment.
Interesting. I'm surprised, as someone who was high on the Jets coming to the season, that you're not immediately all in on this. We have to see it in action, for sure. But I think where I stand right now with the New York Jets... And Breece Hall had his breakout game yesterday in Monday Night Football. He looked really good. But up until this point... It just felt very, very disorganized. I feel like that's the proper word on offense. A lot of frustration. Aaron Rodgers clearly not on the same page with a lot of his receivers. Really only Alan Lazard feels like is on the same page as Aaron Rodgers. And I know Garrett Wilson has had some good games numbers-wise, but they've never really looked like the chemistry is fully there. And the run game is absolutely non-existent. So all throughout the season so far, and I know six games, not the largest sample size, but it's to the point now where we can't ignore it. It just feels like Aaron Rodgers is running around trying to make plays happen. And when they don't, the body language is bad, the eye rolls are there, and it just feels like there's this overwhelming sense of frustration on the Jets sideline. Now, the first play next Sunday night against Pittsburgh Steelers, if he drops back and he delivers a beautiful back shoulder fade on the sideline to Davante Adams, all is forgotten and everyone's going to feel like this is going to be a match made in heaven and it's going to work. But I just think it's a lot to ask of one player that comes in mid-season. It's not like he's had months and months of camp with the offense, because it's not just about the quarterback and the wide receiver. It's about the timing and the fluidity of the entire offensive unit. I just feel like it's a lot of pressure to put on one player, especially a receiver that was he good in Vegas? Yeah. But was the overall move a success? I would say no. And it feels like the years of Davante Adams being the best receiver in the NFL, you know, have passed us by now. So it feels like this immediate turnaround that everyone kind of expects just because we all think it's fantasy football. And when we get, you know, star players to play together, it's just going to click. I don't know if we're going to quite see that.
Yeah, I mean, you make great points there. And you look at the biggest issues with this team. I wouldn't even argue that it was necessarily receiver. Like, sure, yeah, okay, Adams is great. I know Adams is great. I'm not saying that Adams isn't great, but is Adams going to go play left tackle? Because Tyron Smith looks like he's heading for the retirement home soon. He looks awful.
Yeah, he
had right? a tough night. I mean, that was just on primetime. He's been like that all year. Like, that's where it's like, okay, sure, you have Adams, great. But there's still pieces of this team that you just expect quality to be there, and it's not, right? And I know this isn't directly on topic, but I always sort of use, like, if a team is making an in-season coaching change, right? You just look at last year, right? The Raiders, 2021 Raiders last season, and now the 1961 Houston Oilers. So those are the two teams that have made the playoffs after firing their head coach midseason, right? Only two teams in NFL history. That is it. So for me, that is the biggest stepping stone. I know we're not talking Adams here, but it's sort of a change of subject. But once a coach is fired, and we're talking week five, Robert Saleh was fired, it's just, you don't see it. The numbers aren't there to back it up. I get it. It happened to a few years ago. But, like, I don't know. To me, it feels like there's just, it's like a last-ditch panic effort. Like, okay, let's go and get Adams here because Rodgers is running out. Who knows if Rodgers is going to play next year or the year after? Like, we need to make it work right now, and Adams is their best shot. Now, can they be the third team in NFL history to make the playoffs? Because clearly it's not common. Yes, absolutely. I wouldn't be shocked. But for some reason, I just don't feel the Jets are necessarily that team that many expected, including myself, to be there in January and maybe even February, right? I don't know. I just don't get it. I don't get that vibe. And as good as Rodgers is playing, as good as him and Adams are going to be, I still think they're lacking way, way different positions and offensive line, defensive line. I don't know. For me, it just feels off. There's something off with that team.
One reason to be optimistic is I do think the AFC in general this year, even though you're 2-4, I think a bad team is going to find a way to get in. I mean, the Steelers are 4-2 and they're making a quarterback change. Like, that just speaks to the level of play right now in what we all thought was going to be a great conference. It looks like a very, very weak one through six games. What I will say, though, about the Jets that I think is a little bit strange is kind of the narrative around the whole Robert Saleh departure. A lot of times when you see a head coach fired, you see this boost in team morale, in team energy, and they come out flying the next week. Doesn't matter who they play. Doesn't matter if they're the underdog. I remember when Miami fired Joe Philbin in around 2014, 2015. They brought in Dan Campbell. He was a tight end coach. He became the interim head coach, and Miami just played their hearts out for this guy. They won back-to-back weeks by probably a combined 70 points. And eventually it fizzled out just because of the lack of talent. That boost isn't going to last forever. But when I watched the Jets yesterday, there were a couple things they did differently. Like I mentioned before, Breece Hall had a good game. But that boost didn't really seem like it was there. And if anything, their defense was one of their worst performances this season, I thought. And that was their strong point. And it feels like half the team really didn't want to see Robert Saleh go out the door. The defense seems like they loved him. It was working. That was his brand. And I just think you mentioned everything feels rushed right now. Maybe we look back at all this change and say maybe it wasn't good from the beginning. But hey, when you go out and you get a 40-year-old quarterback, the clock's always ticking. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see what's going on in New York. But Davante Adams, that saga is officially over. And I think it was absolutely hilarious that some 3 hours later, the Buffalo Bills said, yeah, we'll raise you 10 more. Amari Cooper, welcome home, which was an absolute bargain of a trade. And I know you were upset that the Cowboys traded him for just a sixth-round pick. But I calmed you down a little bit by telling you, you know, how little the Bills are actually going to have to pay Amari Cooper to play football for them this season. Yeah. What do you make about the Bills' move? going out and getting a guy like Cooper.
I think it's a home run fit, to be honest. I think you saw the success that Stephon Diggs had in Buffalo. I think Amari Cooper is a pretty similar to receiver to Stephon Diggs. They're both very good route runners, if not the best two in the league. He's getting great at getting separation. Josh Allen loves to sling the ball. Like, let's be honest here. This is a team that's been sort of screaming for that wide receiver one. Now, guys like Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman, I mean, Dalton Kincaid, not so much. Dawson Knox, right? Like, there's guys that have stepped up. James Cook obviously stepped up. But it's clear this offense was missing something. So the fact that they identified it and went out and got a guy like Amari Cooper before his sort of price, I mean, getting closer to the deadline, I feel like Amari Cooper would have been a pretty good trade piece because, again, one, he's incredibly cheap, like you mentioned off camera and just on camera. And two, really, Cleveland sucks. So, like, they're just going to trade, right? Like, they were going to trade him 100%. Like, this guy was not going to be a Cleveland Brown next year. It's pretty clear, right? So, the fact that they sort of got ahead of the curve, who knows how long this trade was being for the work. It would be awesome if it was sort of like, oh, they saw Adams go to the Jets. They called Cleveland and said, look, give us Amari Cooper. I don't think that's how it worked, but who knows? I think it's a match made in heaven. I would be all over it if I was a Bills fan. I think this guy makes your offense way better. Like, Amari Cooper is honestly one of the most, he's just a silent assassin because, like, he's not like the flashy wide receiver that's going to be in the media on social media post game. He's not going to be posting stuff and, you know what I mean? Being that like alpha wide receiver one that you're seeing those like big personalities. Amari Cooper likes to just be quiet and show up and dominate on the field on Sundays, right? I know he has the injury issues, which, again, it's concerning in a sense, but I don't know. For a third-round pick, for a team that's looking for offensive rejuvenation and just somebody that's going to be a consistent wideout out there, I think it's a match made in heaven. I think Josh Allen just found his new best friend because him and his ex-one just broke up down there in Houston, right?
I think when you're looking at the Bills as a whole, the season, I mean, they've beaten the four teams with losing records that they, you know, should have handled. And, I mean, they lost to two teams that I think right now, when you're talking power rankings, will probably place above them. But they've looked pretty solid.
Yeah,
and you mentioned guys stepping up. You know, last night it was Ray Davis. One game was Khalil Shakir. And that's all great through the regular season. But it's nice that they got ahead of the curve that way. In January, when you play at Arrowhead or at the bank in Baltimore or in Houston and you have a tough, tough game against a good team, in those moments, it's tough to rely on a group of role players and say, okay, who's going to be this week? Who's going to step up? Because if Shakir, Keon Coleman, or Kincaid, or Ray Davis, someone like that, doesn't have it on a night like that, then you're kind of like, well, you know, we just don't have anyone that we can really consider an X factor on offense. So I think this Amari Cooper, especially for what they paid and their salary cap situation, because they couldn't afford to pay Davante Adams.
Oh yeah, big time.
The Jets have restructured now; it's only like $3-4 million this season. But he came in with $11 million that would have, you know, contributed to the cap right now for the rest of the season. And the Bills, they just could not afford that. So great, great business in Buffalo. The AFC East rivalry is alive and well. After a close game last night, they both make trades this morning.
Funny how that works, though.
Yeah. They're all scared of Tua coming back. I'm telling you. That's.
Or what about Drake May?
He looks good, too. I want to say, I was going to make, you know, joke and just be a biased Dolphins fan and only talk about Tua. Drake May has looked really good.
Mm-hmm. He has.
And everyone talked about how the Patriots are idiots for throwing him in because the O-line's terrible and the wide receivers suck. And that is both true.
Very true.
And he was playing up against a good Texans defense, and he held his own. And, I mean, they got blown out, but throw three touchdowns, 250-plus yards. Yeah. Like, very, very, very impressed by Drake May. A team that would probably love to have Drake May is Pittsburgh Steelers because they just seem to think their quarterbacks suck, even when they win games. And it's a Justin Fields fantasy owner. This guy's been the QB1 over the last 2 weeks. You got to be kidding me right now that he's heading to the bench for Russell Wilson after a 4-2 start, after a 67% completion percentage, very, very few turnovers. I get it. They're not pushing the ball down the field with any effectiveness. His wide receiver, too, is also Calvin Austin or Van Jefferson or whoever. And his wide receiver, one, George Pickens, is benched half the time because he's crying. I don't quite understand this Fields move. If they lost, to the Raiders, and it's okay. It's three losses in a row. You started 3-0. We probably weren't 3-0 because of you. I get it. But you're 4-2. Your offense just scored 32 points. Your identity is running the football. He is managing an offense in a way where he's not turning the ball over. He is effective with his legs, and he's doing what he needs to do in the air. I don't think Russell Wilson is going to come in and turn them into this air raid passing attack and, you know, connecting with this deep ball to this non-existent talented weapons group that they don't have.
He may not do that, but at least he'll be ready to play because he's been dressed for it for the last 5 weeks, right?
QB3, emergency quarterback, got to wear the shoulder pads. You never know.
You don't know, right?
Two guys go down.
Look, I don't understand the move personally. I was just in Pittsburgh. Look, it's sort of a double-edged sword here because, yes, Fields is winning right now, which I personally would just roll with it because you're 4-2. I mean, like you mentioned, it's not that you just lost to Vegas. Like, you killed them, right? You put up 30 points, right? I get it. It's Las Vegas, whatever. But what good is going to come from now benching? Because that's what it is. You're benching him, right? I get it. It was Russell Wilson's job, but it was sort of a QB competition. Mike Tomlin himself said it was a QB competition. So you can't just turn around and say, oh, Russell Wilson was the starter. No, because you yourself said that Russell Wilson and Justin Fields was a quarterback competition, right? So you are benching Justin Fields, right? I want to get that clear because there are people I saw on Twitter today in the comments saying, oh, it was Russell Wilson's job at the beginning of the year. No, that's not true at all.
Well, they did name him as a QB1 before he got injured, but then, like, because it was a competition for all of training camp, that was such a, like, it was far from a concrete title.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Like, that was going to be a week-to-week thing. So you're telling me after a 4-2 start, and again, was the passing attack lethal? Was Justin Fields going and throwing for 450 and 5 touchdowns? No, but he didn't need to do that to win games. He is dynamic in the sense that he's winning with his legs. He's making the throws he has to make. And again, like you said, it's not his fault that George Pickens is crying on the sidelines, that Van Jefferson is wide receiver too. Like, Pat Freiermuth is an option for him. I get it. No disrespect to Pat Freiermuth. I think he's a fantastic tight end.
I feel like you just kind of he caught a stray there.
Maybe he did. Maybe he did a little bit. But that was unwarranted. Najee Harris Jeans is running for him. Like, I don't get it.
A great day last week.
But still, like, how does your offense get better by making the move to Russell Wilson? I don't know. I think it's blasphemous to me because I can already see it. Russell Wilson goes in Sunday Night Football, throws 3 picks, and he's out, and it's done. And it's a disaster. Can you not tell me you can't see that? It's going to happen. I'm telling you.
This is where I will play a little bit of devil's advocate because, okay, everyone's freaking out on Twitter about Justin Fields' stats. I'll read you his stats through 6 games. He's got 1,400 total yards, 10 total touchdowns, 1 interception, which, hats off, like, you're not turning the ball over. And they're 4-2, of course. They're making things very, very simple for him, and he's... Like I said earlier, he's not pushing the ball down the field at all. And I don't think right now, if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, yes, you're 4-2, but you're watching Lamar Jackson and you're watching Josh Allen and CJ Stroud. I'm not going to say Patrick Mahomes because I don't think he's really been that elite this year. But you're watching all these top, top level quarterbacks. I don't think with how your quarterback's playing, you feel like you have an offense that can keep up with these teams. And the games you've won, the defense is playing very well, and they're sloppy, grinded out teams. You know, you're beating Denver, you're beating the Chargers, like teams that cannot score a lot of points. You're beating the Raiders. Also, Justin Fields has 14 wins as a starting quarterback in the NFL. Do you know that in those 14 wins, the defense has never given up more than 20 points in a game?
Wow.
Justin Fields has never won a game when the defense allows more than 20 points. It is tough to think that you're 4-2 and you can go out and the Chiefs are coming into town, bring it on. You know, we're going to win. We're going to hold you to less than 20, and that's the only way we can win games. By no means am I a Justin Fields hater. These are just the numbers that are sort of circulating, defending this. Now, where I stand on this matter particularly is that I just don't think that Russell Wilson is any better. And I think right now it's working to a certain degree. Maybe your ceiling is somewhat limited because he's just not that great of a passer. Although last year in Chicago, I thought he impressed me quite a bit. I don't know. It's just, it is a weird thing to do and a risky thing to do, I think, when you're 4-2.
It's definitely risky. I don't know.
What I think they're genuinely doing is a big talk with Pittsburgh going into the season was they don't play anyone in their division till week 12. That's when it's going to be decided whether they're making the playoffs or not. The last, you know, 6 or 7 games of the season when they play a bunch of divisional games. I think they just want to have a good definitive answer of who gives them the best chance to win for those games.
Yeah, but you also run into the risk now of, let's say you go with Russ for 2 games, 3 games, 4 games, and like you're like, oh, Justin Fields gave us a better chance. Now it's like
you burn those games. Yeah, you burn those games that you should have won and you needed to win. And that's why I think it's weird.
But and then it's also just a momentum thing. Like, momentum's real. Like, how do you know if Justin Fields is going to be able to get benched and then come right back in and pick off right where he left off?
Well, you better for the sake of my 2-4 fantasy team right now.
What about me? I'm in a super flex. 2 quarterbacks. I got Baker and Caleb. Obviously, Caleb Williams is on bye this week. I think, yeah, Caleb, the Bears are on bye this week.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, Baker's money.
Who's my third string QB?
Fields?
Russ.
Oh, Russ.
Come on, is it a luck? Is that a luck?
I have Fields. I had Fields, Lawrence, and Nix. I went 0 QB in a super flex. Just punted it. And I took Fields so late.
Well, that's good, though.
Yeah, and Bo Nix has been startable, too. I ended up flipping Lawrence and some other pieces, so I got Mahomes now.
Okay.
So I was thinking, like, Mahomes and Fields, like, you're laughing. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a really nice thing. There goes Fields. So I don't know what I'm going to have to do. Bo Nix is going to have to get some reps here on this team, but we'll see.
I'll tell you one thing for free. You should take some roster building courses from Zio Girone down in Dallas, because Jerry Jones taking a lot of heat today, deservingly so, because the Dallas Cowboys suffered the worst home loss since 1988, I believe was the correct year. 1988.
Is that before
47, yep, before in the Jerry Jones era, that was the worst home loss ever. And you could hear it because he was pissed off. 47-9. And the Lions were toying with the Cowboys. Toying. Dan Skipper looked like CeeDee Lamb lined up out there at wide receiver at one point. They were targeting. I think at one point they forgot they had receivers. They were just targeting offensive linemen. Penny Sewell got a nice look in the back of the end zone there. Couldn't get the feet down, couldn't get his hands around. But you know what I mean? Look. As a Cowboy fan, it was definitely a gut punch. I knew it was coming, personally. I just, look, bad option on paper. The team's not very good. I preached it multiple shows before about how this stretch of games is ugly, and it's going to get ugly, and I think it's going to get way uglier before it gets any better. But as someone that's obviously not involved with the Cowboys as much as me, I want to know what that loss meant to you. Like, does that change your perception on them? Did you expect that? Obviously, nobody expected them to get blown out of the water, but there's a clear gap between the Lions and the Cowboys, obviously.
I wasn't all that surprised that it was a blowout. Cowboys are 0-3 at home this season. Anytime they've played a good team. I remember going into week one, we watched them blow out the Browns, and we were like, oh, this Cowboys defense shutting down Cleveland. Cleveland looked so bad. Now, 6 weeks later, we see that Cleveland is maybe the worst team in the NFL. So we feel a lot worse about that big week one road win with a dominant defensive performance. So look at the Cowboys now. And I just think that in the NFL, if you aren't making changes, you are eventually going to become worse. And you're going to fall behind in the crowd. And it's a very, very loaded crowd. And it's a league where things change quickly. And it just comes down to the fact that Jerry Jones has not adjusted this roster or really made a big effort to improve this roster the past couple of years. The defense is just horrendous. Right now, it's one of the worst, or on pace to be one of the worst run defenses historically in the entire NFL. And when you go up against a team like Detroit, that is just such a high-powered machine, these are the kinds of things that happen. The one thing I want to say about the Detroit Lions, I can't believe that they're not getting more flack for all the different stunts that they're trying to pull in terms of, like, I don't know, the hook and ladder, the jump ball to Taylor Decker, lining up Dan Skipper out wide just because they really turned this into this big rivalry that I think, because of how last season's game ended versus the Cowboys, just it's kind of overblown. Your beef was with the refs, and now you're like trying to embarrass Dallas. And I genuinely think if it wasn't Dan Campbell doing this, because he's so lovable and we think the Lions are this great character story, no one really said anything. If Sean Payton did that, he would be getting cut up for being arrogant, for disrespecting the game. And now we just look at, you know, the Lions and we, or you made a great point too. You said it's because it was, everyone can laugh at the Cowboys and everyone loves to do that. That's kind of where we are.
I think personally it has more to do with the fact that it's the Cowboys than it does Dan Campbell. Again, it's just the nature of right. It is what it is, right? I mean, I love it, but I hate it at the same time. But when it's the Cowboys, people just like to poke fun at it. Again, it was embarrassing, so like it was worthy of it. But I agree, to be honest, because there was a point in that game where Cooper Rush was in, and like it was obviously the Cowboys were waving the white flag, and the Lions not only got the ball back, they got a ball back in the fumble and immediately threw a touchdown pass. Like, okay, like, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, I get it, whatever. Like, the game's done. There's no need for that. I get it's pro sports. We're not really here to not hurt anyone's feelings, but it's not like youth sports, so I'm not going to get too hungover. But I'm surprised, like you said, I'm surprised that not many people are talking about it more so on the shows like Monday morning and today. But whatever, it's not really that big of a deal. Regardless, like I said, I just think it's a matter of the fact that the Cowboys really aren't that good. And they have been good for the last 3 years, right? Three straight 12-win seasons. Mike McCarthy has done a good job up until this point. But there's some quit in that Cowboys locker room. And like I said now, I think it's going to get a little bit uglier before it gets any better down there in Dallas. But the only thing that is getting uglier and not better is my points bet record, because we're looking at 3-7 as of
yikes
week going into week 7 here. I know we missed a week, but as someone that likes to mortgage their picks, I would be without houses, without the potential to buy a house if I was mortgaging my points
banned,
by place of the week.
You're banned from banks. You're banned from borrowing at this point with a 3-7 record.
Yep.
I'm completely flipped script from you. I'm 7-3, missed a 2-0 week last week by half a point. Those Commanders and Ravens, which was a pretty good game. Commanders just did not have enough to hang in there and cover that touchdown spreader. 6.5, I got them at. Lost by 7. Big week this week. Last week was actually one of the weeks where a lot of favorites won. There wasn't a ton of big, big, heavy upsets. But again, as I always do, I'm going to give you the first pick because your record is just so, so bad. You are on the clock, sir. Who would you like to pick?
I'm sick of these petty picks, Pac. I'm sick of them because I don't need it. Because by the end of the season, I'm going to be back plus money. And it starts.
You got a lot of ground to
and it starts with the Falcons minus 2.5. Kirk Cousins. Are we even sure Seattle's a good team? You look at the quarterbacks they beat. Bo Nix in his first start. Skylar Thompson. Jacoby Brissett. I mean, Geno Smith wants to talk about writing, not writing back. I mean, looks like he's going to be writing a whole lot of novels this year, because give me the Falcons minus 2.5. Kirk Cousins all day. I'm starting back. I'm feeling a 2-0 week here, Pac. I don't know what it is. I'm not sure what it is, but I know for one thing, Kirk Cousins is going to dice up that Seattle secondary, and Geno Smith ain't going to do nothing about it, because Kirk Cousins ain't no Bo Nix, ain't no Skylar Thompson, and he ain't no Jacoby Brissett, right? Put some respect on Kirk Cousins' name. Seattle, you don't stand a chance.
Well, I'll give you this. You continue to deliver these picks with the utmost confidence every week, despite that horrible, horrible record. My first pick, I said on last week's show how all season long, the big favorites, not only have they not been covering the spread, but they've been losing outright. And I just think that that is a trend that cannot continue in the NFL. And eventually, it is going to come crashing down. So this week, I'm picking maybe the biggest favorite, the Buffalo Bills, ooh, minus 8.5 at home against the Tennessee Titans. This one is going to be over by the end of the first quarter. You got Will Levis and his generational run of memes. He gave us the Spider-Man screenshot this week. going up against a team that just takes care of business in Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. I don't care if Amari Cooper doesn't have that big of an impact in his first game. I genuinely think the Bills can run all over the Titans, and I just think Josh Allen is going to be a weapon that is too dangerous to contain. Give me the Bills -8.5 at home. I said earlier, they know how to blow up bad teams, and I think they will do that this week.
Look, Puck, that's a good pick. That was on my list, but it's not as good as my Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Baker Mayfield, the MVP of the NFL right now. The MVP. We're talking about the most... Nobody's talking about it. Not one person is talking about Baker Mayfield's MVP caliber start to this season. It's absolutely insane. 15 passing touchdowns leads the NFL. 2 rushing touchdowns to throw on top of that. And just 5 picks? Are you kidding me? If this was Josh Allen, if this was Patrick Mahomes, if this was Lamar Jackson, who he happens to be playing and who happens to beat this week. I'm putting that out there, but I'm just taking +3.5. Put it out there for now. Baker Mayfield would be heralded as the greatest thing the NFL's seen, but it's not. It's Baker Mayfield. And you know what? I'll capitalize on that because I can get him at +3.5. I get it. It's Baltimore. Baltimore looks unstoppable. They look unbeatable. But Baker Mayfield doesn't care. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers don't care. Give me Tampa Bay +3.5 to go and just ruin Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens' day because Baker Mayfield said so. Mike Evans for a couple scores. I'm feeling it. Bucky Irving, Rashad White. I don't care who's touching the ball. It doesn't matter because Baker Mayfield, the NFL MVP, will get it done this week.
He's got to tone it down a little bit from last week. One of the craziest games of the season. They're up 17-0. Then they're losing. He threw a bunch of picks. Spencer Rattler was in there. And the next thing you know, the Bucs just steamrolled their way to a big, big victory. And I actually had them at -3.5 last week, and they covered that with ease to end the game. Last pick of the week. And this is one that I had circled right away when I saw the number. I started going back and forth in my head because the Jacksonville Jaguars have been in London already for a full week and the Patriots are just traveling now. And that sort of time difference, that rest advantage, that travel advantage definitely plays a role in the Jaguars being 5.5-point favorites. And you know what, Doug Peterson, at this point, if you don't win this game, you're not flying home with the team. You're flying commercial on your way home by yourself with not a lot of leg room for an 8-hour flight back to Jacksonville. So they're desperate. But at the same time, this Jacksonville Jaguar team sucks. And we have given them so, so many chances on this show. And I love what I saw from Drake May last week. It's a lot of points. So I'm confident in the Patriots. It's just 5.5. Stay within a touchdown. And I think they will. I think they have a chance to win this game completely with how bad the Jaguars have looked. And if the Jaguars go 0-2 in their true home of London, might as well just cancel the season and you know, simulate the rest of the games. Give me the Patriots +5.5. And there it is. What is it, week 7 now?
Week 7.
There are week 7 picks on PointsBet Sportsbook, the official betting partner of the CTB show. If you want to bet with us every Sunday with Cats Cover 5, every Monday with our same game parlays, head over to the PointsBet app and use code BLITZ when you're signing up. Must be 19 years or older, and always please play responsibly. But there it is, the picks of the week. Cat, are you confident you're going to turn this around or what?
Puck, I've been born ready. It's... the tides have been against me so far. And you know what? To be honest, it's a joke, but it's okay. I'm not one to just lie in a corner and cry. I make it out the mud. I fight, and I fight with my boys. I'm going with Baker Mayfield. I'm going with Kirk Cousins. They're going to bring me... like, you know when they used to carry the kings on the chair, right?
Yeah.
Coming in? I'm going to have Kirk Cousins, Baker Mayfield, and I'm going to be on the throne.
They're carrying you to
victory. They're carrying me.
First 2-0 week of the season.
And won't be the last. It won't be the last because I'm coming back.
All right, closing the show, we got to look ahead to one of the biggest matchups of this week's upcoming slate. The Detroit Lions heading in to the undefeated Minnesota Vikings, our first NFC North matchup of the season. Everyone's calling it the best division in football. The Vikings coming off a bye week. The Lions coming off a 40-point drubbing. They've scored 40 points in back-to-back weeks. Cat, are you taking the Lions to keep rolling and end the Vikings' undefeated season? Because I don't know, this defense has looked pretty... it's going to be very, very different from playing the Cowboys' defense to going on and playing Brian Flores' Vikings defense.
I'm happy you brought that up, Pac, because I think the Cowboys game did this team zero favors this week. I think Detroit sort of left everything there. I think they're going to be in for maybe a step backwards this week, and that's just the wrong week to step back. I'm going to take the Minnesota Vikings, Sam Darnold-led Minnesota Vikings. Who would have thought those guys would be 5-0 at this point in the season? Give me the Vikings. Give me Justin Jefferson. Newly added running back Cam Akers into the mix. Aaron Jones, if he plays, who knows? I just feel so good about this Vikings team. I think they're from top to bottom, from head coach to offense to defense. There's just something about this Vikings team that feels legit. And this is a massive game. Don't get it twisted. This is a game that is going to go right down to the wire. We're talking Detroit Lions and Minnesota Vikings, the two front runners for this division. I like the Vikings in this one, Pac. I think they're going to win outright. I like it at home. Maybe if it's on the road, different story, but give me the Vikings.
If the Vikings win this game, they don't play a team with a winning record until November 24th, and that's in Chicago.
Wow.
So, I mean, we're all sort of, you know, poking holes in this Vikings team and saying, you know, they're not as good as their record suggests. Nobody thought they were going to be undefeated. They are legit, and I actually think I'm going to take them to win as well, and it's going to be a very, very good game. There it is, our Tick Pick Game of the Week. If you want to look for the best tickets in sports, make sure to head over to Tick Pick and use code CTB20 for $20 off your purchase. There's no hidden fees, and you'll always find the absolute best price on the Tick Pick app. There you go, Vikings, Lions, the Game of the Week, NFC North rivals. Should be a fun one. And that's going to be the CTB show for this week. We've got a ton of trades. We just had a trade while we were recording.
Three trades today. It was you know like the trade means. Deadline. Who thought the trade deadline would be on October 15th?
We're going to sit down here in 3 weeks' time and do a trade deadline special, and we're just going to be twiddling our thumbs.
Yeah, we're going to be listening to the crickets.
It's going
to
be terrible.
Yeah, you're right. So, but you know what? We got to be prepared. That's just the nature of things here. But yeah, that wraps up week 7. Pac, we're on to week 7. I need the season to relax because one, my fantasy teams suck, and two, my favorite team sucks. So you know what? Maybe next time we get on the show, I'm enjoying the bye week. I'm loving it. I don't have to watch Cowboys football this week. But we'll see you guys all next Monday.
Take care, guys. Have a good one.